welcome to React Native Radio, episode 95. I'm your host, Nader Dabit. Today on our panel, we have Gant Laborde of Infinite Red.
Hey, hey!
And our special guests today are Sankit Sahu and Saurabh Sahu of Geeky Ants. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hey, Nader. Hey, Gant. It's so great to be on the show.
Hi, guys. I'm so very excited to be on the show.
Absolutely. We're glad to have you. We've been wanting to have you on the show for a while now. I'm glad we could work out a date and time that kind of works good for us. I know you've been doing so much stuff in the React Native community over the last couple of years. You have a lot to talk about.
Indeed, yeah. I'm very excited to speak or to talk about a lot of things, what we have been up to and about the community and what are the next steps we are going to do.
Awesome. So Geeky Ants, can you tell us about the company, like how you started the company and what motivated you to kind of veer in the direction of, it looks like you're doing a lot of mobile app development with JavaScript and actually cross-platform, I would say, mobile app development because you're now doing a little Flutter. Can you kind of just talk about how the company started and how the direction has changed from when you first started to kind of what you're doing now? You're doing a combination of open source as well as client work.
Yep. So there's a bit of history, but I won't go into that detail. But yeah, we started back in 2011 as a web development shop. I was personally involved with PHP, HTML, and all those things back then. And it was when we came across the JavaScript community, and we started with AngularJS and then slowly moved to React. We always wanted to do mobile apps. And that's when React Native came in, and it changed the entire entire atmosphere of how you can build native mobile apps with just the knowledge of JavaScript. And we jumped in and we started working with React Native when it was launched for Android. And slowly we started noticing the gaps between the newly announced technology, React Native, that it didn't have a good UI library back then. And so we thought, okay, we should probably contribute towards adding some sort of UI component library. And then we came up with the idea of Native Base. And that was one of the major open source contribution by us. We were doing a bit of client project as well. And this actually got us some fame in the React Native and React community. And from there, we have been doing a bit of open source. And in combination with that, we have also been doing client projects. And yes, we are a 100% bootstrap company. So we keep all the open source and the product side on like the side projects.
So can you talk about Native Base and kind of what it currently does now and what you're planning on doing with it in the future, I guess?
Yeah, right. So as I mentioned, Native Base, it was one of our first or major open source contribution. And it was announced when there was actually no UI library available for React Native. So it gained quite popularity initially. And today it stands at 8,200 GitHub stars, which is amazing. And we are also nominated for React Open Source Awards, which is happening at React Amsterdam. So we are very excited about that. And we have seen a lot of apps built using Native Base. We have the best testimony which we have got is that the latest version of Olympics app also uses Native Base. And the roadmap going forward for Native Base is to just keep supporting it and keep adding few missing things which is still on the roadmap. So the roadmap is like we keep supporting it and adding few more things.
Very nice. Very nice. Now, you've been adding some other features. I'm sure they've been drawing attention as well. I myself have a Builder X t-shirt. And so I'm sure that how's that project going as well? And is that just sort of working alongside with the community of you working with Native Base? Or do you want to talk about Builder X for a minute?
Yep. So, Gant, I remember like the first time when we actually showcased Builder X, it was at Chain React in I think last year, July. And the feedback what we got from the audience, it was really great. And that got us some motivation to do the next level of investment into Builder X. And since then, we have been building. It's finally shaping up, and our goal is to bridge the gap between design and code so that designers can directly work on the JavaScript files and the developers can directly consume it, make changes, and then give it back to designers if they want some changes on the design side. So we actually are looking to skip the phase of UI development, which is actually even today is manual. So by the end of April, we are looking for a major release with a lot of features, which includes things like SVG and gradients and a ton of things which is actually used in the design and converted to code.
Very nice. Very nice. The process is sort of been a holy grail of, you know, what everybody needs for the handoff, which is always so rigid between most people. Some people have a design team. Some people don't have a design team. Right. It's really great that you're closing the gap there. It's like whether or not however people want to interact with design, the code and the design shouldn't be that far apart, which I think is pretty amazing for, you know, React Native to be there on that. I think that, is there any other tools that you guys are working on right now besides this?
No, it's just right now our main focus is BuilderX. And we are planning to go beyond just React Native on that front so that we
very
can...
Nice. Sorry, I said very nice. Threw you off. What else are you working on to sort of like, well, how are you working on things? So you were going to talk about not just for React Native, and I say like using that to translate into what are your choices for React Native? And that gets in, and that'll easily naturally get us into state management, navigation, and UI library questions. So that's what I was thinking about.
Right. So are you talking about like Builder X or in general?
I guess a little bit of both, but mostly in general.
All right. Okay. So with BuilderX, our primary goal is to just convert the designs to React Native views at the moment. So we won't be adding things like state management and something which is very subjective. But the generic stuff like basic style sheet and view and text and nesting them, or maybe creating a component and reusing that component. So those things will come with BuildRex. Other than that, we have a lot of different things. If not BuildRex, then everybody has choices. We can talk about that.
Well, yeah. What would you say are the choices? Like the big field right now, most people are sort of looking at state management. I guess for having a big successful React Native company, I guess that's one of the best things to sort of kind of come in and state opinions on is what is everybody using for state management?
Yeah, I really love this topic when it comes to things like, which is very subjective and sometimes opinionated for different teams. And it's something to do with the JavaScript ecosystem in general. Like it leads to something what people call it JavaScript fatigue, that you have many options just to solve one single problem. And it has both the sides, like it has its own beauty of the community that you get so many things and you aren't actually tied to use a specific thing. But actually when you're working with teams, especially with an organization like Geeky Ants, you need to agree upon some sort of common patterns or and standards so that the movement of developer from a team to another team is quite smooth and the friction is quite less. So, so coming back to the question of state management, I think we have this buzz around of Redux versus MobX. And at GKS, actually, we have both the types of projects. Few projects have the technologies which is actually insisted by the clients, like Redux. So we don't have an option there. But for the projects where we have an option, we evaluate what sort of project it is and which library or which state management library is apt for this particular use case. So I would say there's no straight answer. It really depends on the use case and the trade-offs which you're okay with to make. So Coming to Redux, it's a great library. We use it a lot in many projects. Though on a personal level, I'm a big fan of Mopex. That might be because of the fact that I come from an object-oriented background, and I love to look at my data models and all those things in terms of classes and having attributes and functions on top of that. And at the same time, Mopex also doesn't drain me with a lot of boilerplate code. I just need to focus on my app. I don't need to worry about the actions which is dispatched and all those things. And even with BuilderX, we are using another variation of, or the container of Mopex called Mopex State Tree, which is amazing. It works really well with TypeScript. And it also supports the things of Redux features like immutability, traceability, so that you can do undo and redo on all those things. And at the end of the day, you can actually mutate the properties, which is really amazing. So my go-to choice for state management would be Mopex State Tree for most of the projects. But it really depends, again, at the use case and all those things.
So I'm kind of curious. I know that a lot of people are kind of moving towards, or at least they're trying to move towards GraphQL. And with the current state management solutions, there isn't really anything, in my opinion, that kind of like works perfectly with GraphQL yet. I'm wondering, do you do any GraphQL development for any of your clients, or are you building any tooling around that? And also, this is just a general question, I guess anyone can answer, even Gant. When you're working with a combination of different APIs, have you ever had an application that did both GraphQL and REST? And if so, like, how did you manage the state management, or is it like an all or nothing type of deal?
So we have been doing GraphQL a lot lately. We have used services like GraphQL and Prisma on the backend side. And on the front end, Apollo client works really well. The latest version of Apollo client, which is also called as Apollo Boost, which supports render props, we are using that a lot. And when you're using GraphQL, you rely on the backend for most of the state of your app. The GraphQL apps are usually CRUD-based apps where you just need to create and display that's the list of entities and just provide something like a delete and update forms. So for apps like that, you don't have much of local state. So in that case, it doesn't really make sense to use a full-blown container, state container library like Mopex State Tree. You are good with just Apollo client, and it also comes with a basic state management which you can use. But yeah, we have also used a combination of them, a combination of Mopex State Tree with Apollo client, and it works really well. Though we haven't used Mopex State Tree to make GraphQL calls directly, but we have used MST just for the local state, maybe for the forms and just like toggle state and little local state sort of thing.
So I'm kind of curious, again, have you looked at Apollo Boost? And I'm wondering also, like, the new version of Apollo that came out, what's different between that and Apollo Boost? I know they added like mutation query and subscription components to the new version of Apollo, I think. And then there's Apollo Boost that had those components there. But I think Apollo Boost doesn't support subscriptions, whereas Apollo does. Like, how do your apps like use subscriptions? And if so, like, what library do you use to implement those? And also, I'm kind of curious just if anyone knows the difference between Apollo Boost and Apollo at this point with the new API update. This is just an off-topic kind of question, then, I guess.
Yeah, actually, we have used Apollo client and Apollo Boost both, but I didn't get a chance to look into if Apollo Boost supports subscription or not. But Apollo Boost uses render props, and render props makes it really easy for you to add any sort of query and mutation. It eases the entire process of over HOC. It's easy to directly have your queries in the render function. And we have liked this pattern a lot compared to the previous version of Apollo. Coming to the subscription, I really don't have any idea. Maybe Kant would be able to answer that.
You know, I just feel like where we're at right now, everybody's stepping on each other's toes. it's part of the, you know, actually, one thing that you said that I found is kind of interesting is you were saying that you've got MobX State Tree to work pretty well with TypeScript. So maybe we can also definitely talk a little bit more about TypeScript, but it's like both, you know, one thing you're saying is MobX State Tree, which is always like trying to enforce runtime and runtime types, and then TypeScript is going to be doing static types, and it almost feels like you're solving the same problem a little bit in each place, and then you come in and integrate everything with GraphQL, which is going to try to manage your state, and it's like they're converging, but they're at the point where every one of them's like, I do this, right? And then they start to like fight each other a little bit. I don't know. Have you had that experience a little bit? Like there needs to be the next iteration where the sort of the alignment will happen, where maybe all these tools will either one will consume the other, or they'll find like an appropriate balance. Or did you find like as you're working with MobX State Tree, like you structured it in a different way that made it like not have so much redundancy with TypeScript? I feel like whatever the next iteration is going to be with these things, either something's going to win or there's going to be a configuration I don't know about. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that, and then feel free to go into why you chose TypeScript, maybe.
Yeah, right. So actually, even I personally think that, yes, you are right, Gant. And there are different methods trying to solve the same problem. If we look at TypeScript and its own types, which is built in, MobX State Tree adds another layer of typing, which is for the runtime. And then if we see the types of GraphQL, it's more or less doing the same thing. So all the three systems are actually defining types of data, but in three different scenarios. And yes, we need a way to merge those things. And I saw this really nice project by some guy on Twitter. This is called as transform.now.sh, wherein you can actually just upload the type of GraphQL, and it gives you the TypeScript equivalent, and it also gives you the MobX State Tree equivalent. And it's really nice. I'm not really sure if that library provides some sort of NPM package which can be used to convert those things on the fly so that I can convert my TypeScript classes to MST and MST to GraphQL. But it's really pretty interesting to see how these things are coming in JavaScript lately.
Yeah, it is getting, and then, I mean, I guess we have to mention Flow at the same time, right? So... Now, you know, you're talking earlier about JavaScript fatigue. It's almost like I'm happy they're merging and you have less stuff, but it seems like we also still have more in some way. But, you know, I'm always interested in why you said you'd use in TypeScript. I don't know if there's a reason why you chose that over Flow. I know we specifically tried both of them and ended up with TypeScript, but... that was about a year ago. And so now I feel insecure telling people that one's better than the other because I haven't seen the other in about a year. So I'm interested in your experience on that.
Yeah, I think Gant, if we talk about Infinite Red and GeekGants, we share more or less the same path. Yeah. About a year ago, both the teams actually tried choosing between TypeScript and Flow, and both of us decided to work with TypeScript and didn't really have a look at Flow lately. But I had a quick evaluation of Flow just about a couple of weeks ago, and looks like they have evolved a lot. I mean, they have taken all the good things from TypeScript. We have interfaces, we have a lot of things which were broken back then, which actually we even spoke in Chain React that you need to update the dependency of Flow with the project itself, which was insane. And those things are really fixed. So today, if you have to choose, both are more or less, we can level them at the same level, TypeScript or Flow. Flow has, the people coming from React, they are always inclined towards Flow because that's the default static type checker. But since I come from an object-oriented background, TypeScript has great support of classes and all the object-oriented patterns. So today, I'll choose TypeScript over Flow, but again, for functional programming, I think Flow might be a better choice.
And I tell you, what's really funny is VS Code, sneaky as it is such a TypeScript supporter because of how well those two are integrated. The second you mouse over anything, it's telling you exactly what it is. And I know that depending on people's workflows and their editors, but I see everybody who's using VS Code, and it pains me to say it. You know, Microsoft got VS Code right. And so every time I'm using that, I'm like, okay, I can see the support.
I totally agree with you on this again, because if you need to enable Flow support in VS Code, you need to disable the basic JavaScript linting, which comes by default in VS Code. And it feels like a bit hacky, but yeah, that's what it is.
Very cool.
Yep.
When you start a new project, typically you need things like a domain name, hosting, things like that. When I choose hosting, I pick mine for the options it gives. I like to know what I'm getting and set things up just how I like them. This is why for your projects, you should check out Linode. Linode servers feature native SSD storage, a 40-gigabyte network, and Intel E5 processors. That's all the power you need to run VMs under full control or Docker containers, who doesn't love that, encrypted disks, and VPNs. Plus, they have 10 data centers across the world and add-ons like backups, Node Balancer, and Longview to help you control your server costs. They also offer block storage for your static files, and you can get started with a $20 credit if you use the code REACTNATIVE2018. That credit is good for 4 months on their 1 gigabyte server. That's a lot of time to try them out and see if they're the right fit for you. That code again is REACTNATIVE2018. Also, if you're interested in working for Linode, they're hiring. Head to linode.com/careers to see their available positions.
So we're about to get to kind of like our next questions that come around, probably things like deployment and continuous integration and things like that. But I do have one last question that this goes back again, because I'm kind of getting into GraphQL quite a bit lately, and I'm interested in seeing what companies that are actually shipping, you know, GraphQL applications are doing. Like, how do you, you mentioned you're using GraphQL. Are you also ever experimenting with building your own GraphQL backend? That's one question. And then my other question is, how are you handling user authentication for accessing database tables and things like that with your GraphQL API?
Yeah. So when we started with GraphQL, we had a lot of options again here. And the options were to use something like a backend as a service like Amazon AppSync or GraphQL, or whether to build our own. Even when we decided, okay, let's go ahead and build our own, we had options like PostgreSQL, which is an amazing tool which just directly connects your Postgres database to provide a GraphQL endpoint. And then we also came across with Prisma, which is the framework which GraphQL uses. So we finally ended up using GraphQL because it was more of a prototype project and it worked really well. And for a couple of projects, we are also using a custom baked solution with Express.js and custom GraphQL bindings with GraphQL Yoga and those things. Coming to the authentication, we are using JWT-based auth, which is not really a part of GraphQL, but acts as a middleware on Express side. And GraphQL also provides something very similar. Are you guys still there?
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm still here.
Yeah.
So how do you manage, if you're building apps for different companies and things like that, how do you manage the deployment of different versions and things like that? Have you ever used anything like CodePush, or do you just ship directly to the App Store?
So we were using CodePush for a while, but things changed, and we are actually directly doing custom build and custom push to App Store and Play Store. So the tools which we are using these days, actually, we were using BuddyBuild a lot a while ago, but Apple decided to buy BuddyBuild and just kill the support for Android, which was so bad. And then we have options like Fastlane, which can easily integrate with Jenkins, and you can actually do your own builds on Mac Mini or something. And then we have a very nice solution by Microsoft, which is App Center. And then we have Vitrise. So for most of our projects, we are using Fastlane with Jenkins because that is what we initially had set up. But these days we are also trying Microsoft App Center because it's a one-stop solution for builds, for deployment, analytics, crash reporting, and all those things. Though people are also doing Vitrise, but right now we are doing more of Microsoft App Center, and the old apps which we have right now are using Fastlane with Jenkins.
Nice. Are you using App Center for your analytics as well? Or are you shipping with the analytics?
So actually, we gave it a shot. Analytics with App Center works well. But we were very much comfortable with using the traditional approach, the one which comes with Mixpanel. Mixpanel is really good for crash reporting and analytics. So with many of the projects, we are using Mixpanel. And Firebase also has a very nice solution for push notification analytics, crash reporting. It's like one-stop solution again, just like App Center. So Firebase is one option. And we also use Fabric's Crashlytics for, again, analytics and crash reporting. But these days, our go-to solution is Firebase. Firebase, because we have many projects going on with Firebase, and it's really easy to use the same tool, which does more than just one thing.
Nice. You know, and I think that there's a key, though, when they know that it's a React Native project, because last I checked, you know, everybody can mention native issues, you know, native crashes, native analytics, but actually getting into the JavaScript analytics, I think also matter. Isn't Amazon sort of getting into this market as well?
Yeah, so like the two big ones right now are probably Amazon Pinpoint and then App Center, like the ones that are kind of like that I've used with React Native that just integrates super easy. So there's already been like an analytics piece for AWS for quite a bit. And it's been, you know, being built out specifically for native for a long time. And they just recently added the support for React Native. So you can add it in with just a few lines of code. So yeah, I would say between, the two that I would recommend between for React Native are probably either AWS Pinpoint, and you would add that to your project by using the Amplify library, which is like a JavaScript SDK, and then App Center, which also has analytics.
Yeah.
Nice.
I really like what you guys are doing with Amazon services. Like you guys recently started going full blown with AppSync, and I still need to have a look at Pinpoint. So I may need to get on another call with you, Natter, to get a little more insight for those things.
Yeah, totally. We'll walk you through it. And, if anyone has any questions, you can always reach out to me. But, totally. Just let me know. And we can have like a separate call or something like that.
All right.
So I have a question about, this is kind of more along the lines of building open source projects in general. Do you have any recommendations about handling an open source project to make it successful? Like for people listening that are thinking about putting something out there and they want to, you know, not only make it useful for people, but also have people like use it and contribute to it so it can stay healthy and things like that.
Yeah, so that's a challenge which most of the open source contributors face. I've seen many projects which just goes as open source, but it is not maintained. So going open source is not a big deal, but maintaining an open source project is one heck of a thing. So with NativeBase or the other open source projects which we are doing, our idea is that the first thing is that choose something which is very common. Choose a problem which can be repeated or which you see in multiple projects. So choose a small problem. And then second, once you start building it, make sure the documentation is up to date. Documentation may involve just writing a good README with proper installation steps, with maybe a GIF, which gives you a clear picture of what this library is about. And then you should include contributions, markdown file on how people can send a pull request and what are the coding patterns which you have used in the projects. And also include things like Travis CI, so that you know that which pull request is failing. And other than that, we have, with Nativeist, we have also built the community. We have discussed like Q&A, like subdomain on Nativeist, like discuss.nativeist.io. And other than that, we are also totally involved with the community on Stack Overflow. Plus, we have been writing a lot of articles. So yeah, these are the few tips which I would actually give to anyone to maintain any open source project.
Would you say that your contributions to the open source ecosystem have helped your business grow? And do you think that's kind of like part of running a consulting company these days is that combination of what you mentioned, like writing articles and things like that, but also having some type of open source work out there or contributing to other people's open source that is part of the community?
I totally agree that contributing to open source is something which has helped us to build our brand, and that in turn has helped our services part, wherein we help other clients. So yes, both the things must be there. The first thing is that it needs to solve a real problem, and second, yeah, getting involved with the community always helps in building a brand, which in turn actually has helped us to get more projects and get more recognition throughout.
You know, one other thing I'd say that I think is overlooked with that is funny enough, is that a company that contributes to open source has better developers. And I know that's kind of going out there with the extreme statement, but when people are really learning how to and working on how to work together, how to make things clear outside the company, sort of like working on open source, not only does it help the company, but those developers, I've always found the ones who are good or work on how to be good at open source are amazing developers inside the company as well.
Yes, so, I totally agree with you there again, Gant. Yeah, like if you have an open source project that works as the best testimony of your brand, and yes, you can say that your developers can communicate well, can put things out there which others can understand and reuse. So that adds a lot of value.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, if you can work well in that environment, you can work well inside. I think it's great. I always like working with companies who really care about open source. So it's always fantastic when people are coming out of libraries and putting out new stuff. And you hit the nail on the head. It's the upkeep that's the really, really difficult part there. But at the same time, that sort of forces you to have to reinvent and keep things awesome and keep trying to push it further.
So yep. This is React Native Radio, but we try to remain pretty unbiased when it comes to kind of like discussions around other competing frameworks, because I think it's super healthy to kind of not only keep our eyes out about what's available out there as a competitor, but also if there's something better, you know, that's available for us as developers to kind of like attach our time and our effort to. It's always good to kind of keep discussions going about that. We've had different shows on things like Xamarin, Native Scripts. We've had Ionic on here. In the future, we have something around Vue Native, and I've been meaning to reach out to the team at Google to talk about Flutter, because I've talked to Seth Ladd a few times, and he's been just probably one of the most amazing people that I've ever dealt with in any project as far as like being helpful and kind of like opening a dialogue about anything that you have as far as questions around the project, he'll answer those. So this brings me to my next question. Like, what other mobile frameworks are you focusing on other than React Native? And are you shifting your focus away from React Native, or is it just broadening your focus?
So it's not like shifting our focus away from React Native, because React Native is amazing. It is it's something which gives you native views with the use of JavaScript. So that learning has helped, and we have gone far using React Native. But it has few of the downsides. With React Native runtime, you have a complete JavaScript runtime running, and the native realm is totally separate. And the problem what we have seen is that any interaction on the user interface actually passes the info from the native thread to the JavaScript thread, and from the JavaScript thread back to the native thread. So this causes some sort of lag in React Native, which we have seen, especially when we use something like a band responder to, say, track mouse, X, Y, and all those things. That's one of the problems. And then second one is, it is related. When you are doing animation, if you have some sort of logic which actually directs the animation, then the communication over the bridge happens quite often, which actually, again, slows down or I would say clogs the bridge between JS and native. So this is a problem with the runtime of React Native. To solve that, we have been looking for alternatives. And this is where Flutter comes in. Flutter is really great, which handles this particular problem. It doesn't actually separate out the runtime from the native layer, but actually Flutter has its own ahead of time compiler, which actually runs right there on the native thread. So if you have anything like logical animation or anything like which handles the touch event, and you want to do some sort of logic based on the X and Y position of the gesture, so those things can easily or more smoothly happen in Google's Flutter. So that's one thing. And then second, we have been doing Vue.js a lot on the web projects. And I really love how Vue.js components are laid down. Like, you just do template and then a script and a style. You have a defined pattern to build any component, which has its logic in a script, which has its styling and a style tag, and then a template, which is really good. So we are also looking to bring the same thing to React Native. We call it Vue Native, wherein you can just do things like Vue text and all those things, but in the style of Vue.js. And you can use all the goodness of Vue.js, like Vuex library and two-way binding and templating and all those things.
Very nice. You know, I was actually just at the US Vue conference last week, and I didn't know any of that stuff. I would have gone to plenty more talks.
So, like, how do you decide, like, if you have a new client, how do you decide what framework to use? Or do you kind of use, if you're trying to learn something a little bit better, do you kind of, like, shift to that? Or do you kind of say, oh, this particular use case would work better with React Native or Flutter, and then do it that way?
So since we have built our brand in the React Native community, most of the clients who come to us, they come with a specific choice, like, I want to build this in React Native. But there are a few clients who give the option to us, so we evaluate based on the requirement. If we talk about Vue Native or Flutter, we actually have a dedicated R&D team, which is actually full-time into evaluation of new technology. They keep evaluating and looking for more, and once they like a technology, they try to set standard patterns and set up a boilerplate or boilerplate project for us. And from there, actually, we go ahead and use those starter kits in real projects.
Well, I think we're kind of getting close on time. Is there anything else you wanted to discuss before we wrap it up today?
I think we're good. Gan, do you have any questions?
Just looking forward to seeing you, bud.
All right. All right, so it was really great talking to you guys.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for coming on. We are now, I guess, going to go ahead and get to the picks. Gant, do you have any picks today?
Yeah, of course. I'll have to pick definitely where I want to see everybody. And you will see Natter and Sankit and I at the Chain React conference in Portland, July 11th, 12th, and 13th. That's definitely going to be a top of the line pick for sure. As a secondary, I am really close to releasing a new version of something. If you've ever been in a situation where a React Native project runs on your machine and doesn't run on a coworker's machine or the client's machine or anything like that, it's due to that insanely large tool chain between all those different pieces. You might have one version that's totally different of Watchman or Yarn or whatever will happen. So I built a tool called Solidarity, which simply tells you, helps you identify what the difference is and helps you enforce specific versions of all the different pieces between. It's not just for React Native. I just built it because React Native needed that so much. And I'll definitely say that any language that uses lots of moving parts could benefit from it. It's called Solidarity. I'll provide the link so that it can go out with this podcast.
Plus one on the Chain React conference, which was my pick, I think either last week or the week before. One of my favorite conferences, even though it's only been one time. Infinite Red just did like a really amazing job. And I think they've been doing conferences, or they've done some other conferences that weren't React Native in the past, so they have some experience, I guess. But everything was just top notch and fun. So,
nice.
Sankit, do you have, or your, or Sabah, do you have any picks today?
Actually, Infinite Red also launched Ignite 3.0, or they are actually working on that. I look forward to try that out as well.
And yeah, yes, man, it's going to be good.
Yeah, and yes, yeah, I look forward to see you guys at Chain React.
Awesome, awesome. Look forward to see you to you there, as well as React Amsterdam, which will probably be out the week that this episode is released, next week. I have a couple of picks. My first pick is a book called Shoe Dog. It's the memoir of Phil Knight, the creator of Nike. It's probably the last book I thought I would ever want to read or be really pleased by from reading. But I keep hearing people telling me to read it, so I was like, you know what? I'll go ahead and read it. And I have a million books on my to-read list. So for me to actually read one that isn't something I normally would read, I'm really pleasantly surprised. It's hard to explain. It's kind of a lot different than I thought it would be. And I'm not really like a fan of Nike or anything either. My second pick is doing authorization with GraphQL has been kind of like my focus lately. And I think there aren't a lot of use cases on the internet as far as examples are concerned that actually go along with the spec. And if you look at graphql.org/learn and go to authorization there, they're pretty specific about how authorization should be done, and they actually have a lot of good reasons behind that. A lot of it has to do with two things. One of those is how performant the query would be, and then the other is around security. So AppSync is what I've been specializing in as well a lot lately. So I'm going to be putting out a couple of blog posts and videos over the next couple of weeks that go into how to properly do authorization with GraphQL and AppSync. So look out for that. And that's my only other pick. So that wraps up episode 94. Geeky Ants, thank you both for coming on. We really enjoyed having you.
Thanks a lot, Natter. Thanks a lot, Gant, for having us here. Yep.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.